Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Going to be talking a little softer. I won't be able to be so passionate with what I have to say today. And that's just because I'm really close to losing my voice. As I told you, I got inflicted by somebody that didn't think that, because there's no impact. I talk about this, I've said this and I've ranted on this, because there's no economic impact on somebody going out into public sick and getting other people sick, unless you have AIDS. See, if you have AIDS and you have unprotected sex and you don't tell your partner, period, that you have AIDS, whether it's protected or not, then you could be charged with manslaughter if that person gets AIDS and ends up dying. And so, or at least charged for a crime because you've caused undue harm. Anyway, I have been affected. And so, and I really do my best. People call me a germaphobe because I just don't like getting sick. So I know when it's this time of year, I take care of the stocking up and all of that in the summertime so that I don't have to, I minimize how much I have to expose myself. But anyway, and that's why I rant. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And really, regardless of what's going on, who's discovering, who's not getting discovered, all the train wreck is going to continue. It is going to continue, and it's going to get worse and worse. And as my article points out, we are living under the tyranny of a federal standing army where there is no constitutional standing for any of this. And I am telling you, we have to act. We have to demand compliance to the Constitution. That is far more important than anything, unless what that one thing is there is a nuclear missile heading onto your position right now, and you've got a matter of seconds. And that ain't the case, my friends. The reality is that if we do not act, we will lose our liberties. It is time to wake up and recognize that we've had a good run. We've not, had to really, roll up our sleeves and get into a good fight. We have had others, whether they be the volunteer military service, doing the fighting for the globalists, however you want to put a spin on it. But bottom line, we have had a good run because it hasn't required the citizenry to really stand up and say enough. And if you don't, if we don't, then we will have no liberty to pass on to our posterity, prosperity. Anyway, forgive me. So as you know, you are listening to the only show that provides the academic evidence and solutions regarding what it takes to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. In our last episode, we were covering the Bill of Rights because Bill of Rights Day was the 15th on Sunday. And so what we want to do is we're going to go through those, but I'm trying to set the stage so you understand why there was really no necessity in the onset of the Constitutional Republic, how the Civil War required the Bill of Rights. And today, states need to take the initiative and establish those Bill of Rights as they see fit. I'm going to stand here and tell you, do not, if your state is going to imbue and integrate the Bill of Rights into your Constitution like it should, I would highly recommend that you do not allow the press to be free. What we have to do is we have to set standards, just like we have standards for plumbing, electricity, and we should have standards for our politicians and our press. That is how we have been duped and manipulated over the past two centuries. And we'll get into that manipulation as we get closer to Christmas, because I'm going to go through my famous Christmas, which, you know, I had my Christmas story or my show actually put into a Maryland paper. And I think it actually ran last week or 2 weeks ago. Anyway, I'm just here to tell you that we have been duped and manipulated long enough. And so we want to just move forward into the Bill of Rights so that you understand what the Bill of Rights intended to do and how it was really not necessary until the Civil War. And it was still viewed by lots of people as underhanded. And what I mean by that is there were a lot of people that have a lot of issues and problems with the fact that the Bill of Rights were, and the 14th Amendment to be ratified was a stipulation for the states to come back into the Union. Now, to be clear, states seceded. They left the Union. They officially left the Union. Now, Lincoln said that they couldn't. Clearly they could, and they did. And Congress acknowledged the fact that they did. And Congress basically put the stipulation on them. We've already ratified this. The Bill of Rights was ratified, or the 14th Amendment was ratified by the existing northern states. They didn't need the southern states, but they wanted to make sure that they had to accept the 14th Amendment as well, because they would have probably tried to do some shenanigans, because they were only out to do... you know, there's lots of great people that live in the South, but back in those days, they were pretty petty. And I mean, all of the people in the South were petty. There were 900 and some odd petty men who met, I believe it was in, I want to say it was North Carolina, that actually voted for the Civil War or secession. And these 900 men were the most prestigious plantation owners throughout the South. In other words, it was not a representative government. It was the representation of the affluence of the Southern slave trade. And there were many people, as Thomas Sowell points out, there were many people who had no desire to perpetuate slavery anymore. And the fact that they violated the Constitution, and Monroe allowed that to happen with regards to the Missouri Compromise, I'm bamboozled at, you know, how we couldn't learn our lesson from those great men during the Constitutional Convention in saying, you know, we needed to get rid of this. And so anyway, long story short, as you understand, we had to apply the Bill of Rights to the states with the 14th Amendment. So again, it was constitutionally ratified by the North, and any state that wanted to come in at that point had to come in and acknowledge the entire Constitution, and they just forced them to ratify it. I don't think they needed to do that, but I think it was a little of rubbing the salt on the wounds. And bottom line, there are way too many people out there that says that because of that, it's an illegitimate amendment. I disagree. But I think what we need to do is we need to get rid of the Bill of Rights, at least those few Bill of Rights that deal with individual privileges and immunities, and force those into the states. Because, as you understand, as the framers spelt this out, this is an enumerated constitution. We only give them these powers. If it is not listed, they can't do it. And had we maintained that paradigm, the Bill of Rights would never have been necessary except for the South and the Civil War. And if that makes sense, then we should be able to obtain the level of enlightenment to say the constraints need to be at the state level, because the states kind of have general constitutions. Some of the states have kind of general constitutions instead of enumerated. And so with that, because we give them a general power over education and a general power over healthcare and general powers over these things, so they can do anything. And so this is why We need to revisit the state constitutions. That's why it's really important to understand the difference between that general and enumerated. That's why I go through this so much. But with that, let me just, because we're going to get right back into the Bill of Rights when we come back from the break, but I don't run ads all the time. All I do is run promos, but I want you to understand Red State Coffee right now is the time to get it. Why don't you try it, send it off to some friends, and let us know what you think. We've got that comment line, 425-270-5416. That way, if you think this is a good premium coffee, and yeah, it may be a little expensive, but you're supporting a great cause, then give us a call. Let us know what you think. And would you recommend it? How did it? How was the product? How was the service? Give us the details on our sponsor, 425-270-5416, and we will be able to pass that on to them and hopefully maybe even make you famous, because we'll probably possibly cut out that little quip that you might say and make that into an ad, because we believe that the best advertisement is from the absolute consumer that says, hey, this is it. This is the best way to go. Anyway, with that, we're going to be going into a break. I'm going to give my vocal cords a little bit of rest and some replenishments with some fluids. And when we come back, we will be getting back into where we left off yesterday or in our previous episode. Okay? That way you will be able to, you know, hit the ground running, and we'll all hit the ground running regarding the Bill of Rights. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so I just want to give you a look forward. We are going to be doing a special before the New Year's regarding New Year's goals. If you're going to have any New Year's resolutions, it might be good to listen so that you can understand some of the things that will help you be more successful, okay? The other thing is we want to do a follow-up with Mitchell Nicholas Gerber. I want to start getting people to digest the concept that Hong Kong can become a state of the United States. Taiwan can become a state of the United States. It doesn't happen overnight. There's a process, and there is a rigorous process of changing currency, changing language, and that type of stuff. But if they become a state in the United States, it's all over. They will never have to look over their shoulder towards communism, other than the fact that we've got it running amok here unless we stop it. So anyway, let me just dive forward. And one, thank you so much for your support and listening this year. As we're wrapping up this year, heading into the holiday, a Merry Christmas holiday. I don't want to sound politically correct. Not about that. I hope most people, anybody that knows me knows I'm really not about political correctness. Anywho, so thank you for tuning in, and thank you for sharing and helping us grow the show. We really need to grow the show to get the message out to more people. And so I beg, I implore, I beseech you to please, you know, speak to other like-minded people who are looking for solutions, because I truly believe that's what people want. They don't really want to watch this calamity, this train wreck. We're wasting way too much valuable time. We're losing time. It is time to get informed and get involved. As I've gone through that, those three premises of reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree, that knowledge is power only when we choose to act upon it. And three, the people are the fountain of political power. If that makes sense, those three things, then what we're learning here and what we're discussing, and you're not going to find an argument that refutes Republic Review. There is not one. You cannot find it. As a matter of fact, the beautiful thing is, even though I may have originally came up with this whole concept in a bubble, but as I have done all the due diligence and research, this is exactly what Jefferson and Madison were talking about. There's no doubt in my mind. And these aren't just my words. These are plenty of other people that really know and understand. They've come back and said, man, I think you've studied the framers so much that you're thinking just like them now. Anyway, and forgive me, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I'm asking you, because it is you that can really help grow this show, period. It is that important. So anyway, let me dive forward in talking about where we kind of left off. To me, it was very clear as to why we did not need the Bill of Rights. But as I've said, the Civil War, it became apparent because of the Civil War that we had to apply the Bill of Rights to the states. It is not necessary for the Bill of Rights to be applied to the federal government. And as we go through this, I will prove this to you, because bottom line, they cannot make any law regarding the restriction or regarding the speech, regarding anything. And yet they've created all these regulations in establishing religious requirements of keeping us. And that's the same thing as making a law. The federal courts have made laws against you can't do these things. And that is the same thing in a violation of the Bill of Rights. So we'll get into that when we go through this. To be very clear, because we did not have a heretical line or lineage of power of sovereigns, i.e. kings, emperors, a bloodline, unlike Britain, Rome, and many of the other republics in Western society, because we didn't have that heretical lineage of royalty, we did not need to have a Bill of Rights, because we did not have general powers bestowed upon these royals, these kings and emperors and so forth, because they were the sovereigns based on the principles and concepts of this divine nature of royalty. Gotta settle down. I don't want to lose my voice halfway through the show. Because of this concept of the divine nature of royalty, that they were ordained and coronated by God, that they were to rule us, that we were supposed to let them rule us, that is why Britain, revolted and ended up having their Bill of Rights to protect the people from tyrannical powers asserted by the king, because it had been happening for thousands of years in these different republics. This whole concept of challenging the royal line, as I've said many times before, came from Locke. John Locke challenged this concept, and as I pointed out, I believe, in the previous episode, that when Abel slayed Cain, killed Cain, in the Bible, God did not go to Adam because Adam was the sovereign. Adam was not the sovereign. All of Adam's children were independent sovereigns. This is why God went to Cain and said, "Why does thy brother speak from the dust or from the dirt or whatever?" Anyway, I'm paraphrasing. The important thing is that whole paradigm proves, and it sets and establishes, this concept that we're not to have kings over us, that we're all supposed to independently choose. There's no such thing as collective salvation. This has to be done on a personal level. You cannot be saved by giving money to the government because you're paying charitably to take care of people in need. Government has only perverted the concept of, what do I call that, compassionate services. They have perverted compassionate services. This is what's created the entitlement state. And so we, as we created these colonies and as we were getting ready to create the independent colonies from the Declaration of Independence, we had a pure representative form of government. We did not have an aristocracy. We did not have any royal lineage. We believed that all men were created equal. Jefferson argued that in 1770, 6 years before he even wrote that Declaration of Independence. And Mason actually echoed that in the Virginia Constitution, which was prior to the writing of our Constitution. Nevertheless, the cry from the Anti-Federalists as they were ratifying the Constitution was all about the lack of a Bill of Rights. This, my friends, was hyperbolic or hyperbole, whatever you want to call it, because I hear people pronounce it like plethora or a plethora. Anyway, I'm just telling you that it was all hyperbolic rhetoric. That's all it was. They were just trying to do everything they could to maintain state sovereignty. And had they gone down that path of maintaining state sovereignty, then we would not have been able to pay our war debts, which we owed France and Holland for. And so we were able to actually pay our debts, get out of debt, and actually become independent within the first, 25, 50 years? I think it was Andrew Jackson was the first time we were completely out of debt. Now, that was one of the good things about Andrew Jackson, right? Anyway, the whole point is that when it came down to the first session of Congress, and as everything went forward from the ratification debates, Madison championed the concept. He says, "You know what? If you believe we need this, then it doesn't matter. I will be the champion for this." And he promised his constituents that he would do this. Now, maybe all of the rest of those who ran for Congress didn't champion and didn't say, "I promise to give you these Bill of Rights." Maybe there was a lot of hoodwinking, but I am here to tell you, when it came to Congress's first session on May 4th, 1789, when James Madison stood up in that first session and announced his efforts for a Bill of Rights, again, and I think I mentioned this in the last episode, he was told, "Hey, we don't need to make any amendments. Let's kick the tires on this thing. Let's see what we can do with this thing." And that was the attitude of Congress. Had we not had such the impeccable integrity of James Madison in that representation, had Patrick Henry been successful in undermining Madison's attempt to get into Congress and actually got James Monroe into Congress, there would have been a greater likelihood that there would have been no Bill of Rights. There would have been a greater likelihood that the states would have convened another convention. And I'm here to tell you that those who were convening the convention then, just like today, they have machinations of empowerment for themselves. There is an attempt to create a fourth branch of government. The Convention of State folks, I have a great source because I've had leadership at the state level tell me that the intent isn't to actually produce amendments. The intent is to create a perpetual convention, like a watchdog group. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. Anyway, can't believe we're already out of time. I'm trying my best to keep my voice, so that's why I'm speaking this way. And no, I'm not trying to be sexy. This is not a good thing. Anyway, we will be right back, and we'll be diving in more background on the Bill of Rights and into the Bill of Rights. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Madison being good to his word, he became the champion for the Bill of Rights, or for individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and in ingraining that into our constitutional republic. Now, I'm here to tell you again, I think it did more harm than good. Why? Why did it do more harm? Because people believed that they had all of these exclusive rights. Look at where we are today. When you list the rights, that means that they can figure out a way to play and manipulate them. And now, because, you know, they can't make any law, they've actually said that you cannot, you know, you have, you know, there has to be a separation of church and state. That is a law. That is a law and violates the First Amendment. And so what we need to do is we need to change our paradigm to not about the rights, but to the explicit powers delegated. We need to look at the Constitution and say, where was this power given for you to regulate or control energy, the environment, healthcare, education, and so forth, because all of these are usurpations of the state's rights and powers that the federal government has no constitutional standing to exercise. It's that simple, folks. So, Madison was a very smart cookie, and there's too few people understood his brilliance and genius, because George Washington either was way too busy, or he was just didn't have the self-confidence in his speech and the way he wanted to say and articulate things. He had Madison write his replies back to Congress. So at the very beginning of Congress, end of April, 1st of May, at that point in time, when they started the sessions, there was communications back and forth. Madison wrote the communications from Congress to the president, and he wrote the communications from the president back to Congress. So guess what? He started using his position in being the sole communicator to kind of write and hint that we needed to pursue the Bill of Rights, that George Washington wanted and thought that we needed to do good by the ratification debates. And so in a way, he was using, and Washington, you know, signed off on these things because Washington had that much respect for James Madison. So you have to understand that Madison was so brilliant that he didn't dupe Congress, but he convinced Congress to do the right thing, to maintain the Constitutional Republic. Washington understood this. So, again, if you have not figured out by now, Madison, at least in my opinion, is probably the most prestigious person in the history of our Constitutional Republic, more than Jefferson, more than Washington, any of these guys. He did more in securing liberties for the generations to follow. I mean, yeah, the Declaration of Independence was a foundation. But without Madison and what he did, I'm telling you, there would have been another convention. The states would have taken back sovereignty, and we would have been, who knows, we'd all be speaking German now, maybe. Who knows? Because Germans started rising to power in the 1800s in challenging Britain, because we were already challenging them. And so that's what caused their collapse in their economy, was their socialism in the 1870s, 1880s with Otto von Bismarck, which drove them into World War I. Who knows? Anyway, when it came down to this whole concept of moving forward, Madison, I want to share this with you, though. Madison was really not prepared for the pushback that the House gave him. This is why he had to resort to using his communications for Washington. He understood what needed to be done, and he got it done. And again, his greatest aid and alliance came from what he considered at the time his greatest enemy, which was the Anti-Federalist. And I say that because at the end of May, I think it was like May 25th, this is when New York formally petitioned Congress. Now, they voted on it previously, just like Virginia was the first state to formally petition, or actually vote for, a petition of an Article 5 convention. They did it in 1788. And they did it after they ratified the Constitution. They said, we want to propose this, you know, petition for an amendment. So they were the ones that kind of laid the ground and how to do all of that. And so at the end of May, they had two standing petitions. So when Madison brought the subject back up at the end of May and said, look, you've already got two states. If you do nothing, other states will come and they will have their two-thirds, and we will be dealing with a constitutional convention that can completely change our world and this makeup of this government that we have today. It could have actually destroyed the Union and the Republic. And so I hope you understand that the Anti-Federalists were probably more integral in convincing Congress than even Washington's, you know, communications that Madison was writing to kind of cheer them on to do the good thing. Washington understood the separations of power, that Congress had to do what Congress had to do. But he did, you know, again, cheer them on or champion them to do good things. And so it was, I believe, the Anti-Federalists who were probably the greatest ally in helping him. The misguided Convention of State folks, again, point to the first session. And I'm talking about the current Convention of State folks. They point, if you go to their website, they point to the first session of Congress and how Virginia and New York applied for these Article 5 conventions and how this is the way to act. No, this is not the way to act, but we do not want Congress to solve these problems because Congress is outside the boundaries. What we have to do when you have a contract that is not being complied with, you don't try to go and make changes to the contract. You enforce your contract. Anybody that has an inkling of contract law understands that you have a right to audit that contract and call out your subcontractor, and in this case, the federal government, and call them out for those contractual violations that they are doing against our compact and get in line or deal with the consequences. Because bottom line, there are tools within the Constitution that I think will provide grave consequences, because some of those tools is treason and hanging. If they fail to do what they're supposed to do, the Civil War, which gave us Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the Civil War really restored that taste in American, in our mouths as an American free nation to say, we cannot take, we cannot tolerate, we cannot allow rebellious behavior. That's why the third section of the 14th Amendment was given us. And that's why you need to read the Congressional Globe, the actual conversations in Congress as to what they were saying. It had nothing to do with treason. It had everything to do with moral perjury. And so we will get into that a little bit later. And I've actually gotten into it a bit, but I'm actually going to read those parts for you a little bit later, but not this year. We'll get back into that when we, you know, have that time to do that. There's lots of other things I need to do first, but you're more than welcome to go look and prove to yourself. Don't take my word for it. That really upsets me when people just want to, oh, just tell us what to do. No, you're a free thinking person. You need to actually read and understand these words, because I am so confident that once you read these things, you will come to the exact same conclusion I have. If you are reasonable, if you, you know, reasonable people equally informed, seldom disagree. And so anyway, as I move into, because we're almost there, we're almost going to get into these and start with the reading of the Bill of Rights. What they missed is the intent of these two states were not noble. The Convention of States think that what these two states were doing was a noble thing. And that was the furthest thing from the truth, because Henry and Clinton wanted their power back. And they wanted to dismantle the Constitutional Republic. And so when you read through anything, the propaganda on the Convention of States site, you will realize that they're not talking about the machinations of what would have happened had they had a follow-up constitutional convention. I truly believe, and I don't know why the John Birch Society and some of these other organizations don't actually go to Congress and start creating a consensus of saying, we need to remove the convention portion of Article 5. We just need to remove that. Because then they'd be championing an amendment, and people would go, well, isn't that speaking out? Well, no. What we want to do is we want to protect ourselves from ever having to deal with the machinations of people who are trying to assume these powers. The Convention of States today is following the exact same path, and the good patriots, I'm telling you, there are really, really great patriots in this cause for the Convention of States, but they have been bamboozled. They've been duped into believing that this is the only process, that they believe, one, this is a good process, that they don't see the machinations, or they don't see, you know, the forest through the trees. And they truly believe that this is the only process because it's the only thing within the Constitution. You have to remember that the states are not tied to anything within the Constitution except for Article 1, Section 10 are the restrictions on the states. If it's not listed in there, the states can do anything like audit and enforce their Constitution. We will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so now drum roll. Here we go. We're going to actually start reading each of the Bill of Rights, and we'll kind of editorialize for you. And I have to set the stage because the paradigm back then was that they understood and they lived within the boundaries of the separations of power. Only Congress could make laws. The Supreme Court couldn't make laws with rulings. The president couldn't make laws with executive orders. These two paths were perverted, and first perverted quickly by the courts. It was later when the executive started perverting this, and that was with, like, Andrew Jackson. And so you'll find that some of the executive orders were making laws and making decisions that only Congress could make. So when I say Congress shall make no law, what I'm meaning, because the paradigm is that the federal government shall make no law. None. It can't exist on paper. It can't be enforced. It can't be promulgated. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Now, this is the federal government. They can't do these things. Now, the two things that I think that the states shouldn't include in this portion of the First Amendment is I believe that the states should be able to make law and or allow the establishment of religion. Because I believe the state, like they used to at the beginning of our Constitutional Republic, They used religion to administer compassionate services. That was when there was no need for real welfare programs. There was no need for it. And it became problematic because the state started stepping away from it, and the churches were struggling, and the churches says, hey, we can't do this. You guys have to create your own welfare state because you're not giving us the money to cover this. Because things cost money. It just costs money to put, you know, food in people's belly. It costs money to give them the training necessary to get a job and so forth. And when you start entitling people, because that's what government does, churches and religion don't do that. They don't necessarily entitle. They work with the humility of the individual to say, well, if you're willing to take compassionate services, then you need to live within, you know, some standards. You can't be living a riotous life and morally take money from other people, you know, to subside yourself and to pay for your drugs or to pay for your alcohol. That's why it was a brilliant system, and it was a brilliant operation at the beginning of this republic. And unfortunately, under the guise of religious freedom, now we could have just changed how we did this to embrace all of the Christian faiths, because again, all the other faiths were banned. All the states had bans on Islam, Buddhists, and so forth. You couldn't openly practice at that point. Even the Jews had a hard time. The Jews complained to Washington. If you read, I think it was John McCullough's 1776. If you read that, no, actually it wasn't that. I think it was, maybe it was Ron Chernow's biography on Washington. I believe it was when he became president, one of his officers that served under him was Jewish, came up to him when he got to New York and was getting on a boat to go somewhere. He saw him and they started talking. He goes, you know, this is really sad that as a Jew, we're not able to openly practice our religion. And that really weighed on Washington because, you know, he thinks that at that point in time, they were good people. Anywho, I mean, Christ was a Jew, right? Anyway, let me move on. Or the right of the people. So Congress or the federal government shall make no law respecting the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. See, this wasn't an or, this was an and. So the whole concept of this final clause is that the government, the federal government and state government, should not make any law that keeps you from assembling and petitioning your government. That doesn't mean you can go down and shut down the commerce in Wall Street or shut down the commerce in your community. You are to assemble in the government, you know, buildings and spaces, and you are to demand that government address your grievances in how they are treating you or violating their oath and so forth. That was the whole concept. It was a very civil government. They did not believe that you had a right to shut down somebody else's ability to go to work or to conduct commerce or anything like that. That would have been unconscionable to them. Second, the right to keep and bear arms. Now, I'm going to have to go back and forth, and with the layout right now on IT, it'll take me a second to go back to Article 1, but the whole first part of the Second Amendment, and this is why you really need to read the article on Reclaiming the Republic regarding the Second Amendment and the militias. The whole point of the Second Amendment starts off with this concept that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Okay, so we've got that. So this whole concept that a militia is necessary to a free state, then when we go to Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15, it says right here that Congress shall provide for calling forth the militia for doing three things: to execute the federal laws, of the Union to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. In other words, the only federal enforcement force that is constitutionally allowed in our current Constitution is the militia. I want you to get this, get your arms wrapped around this, because this is that important. There's nothing, nowhere in the Constitution that has allowed the federal government to create the FBI, the Department of Justice, to enforcements, you know, to have their own marshals, other than to enforce. And as a matter of fact, it is still the militia's job to enforce federal law for counterfeiting and those types of things. Period. There, find the amendment that says that the federal government shall create a federal bureaucracy or enforcement agency with this power. It is very clear that the Constitution granted the enforcement of all constitutional powers and laws that are constitutional to the militia. Sorry, friends. If you're working in an agency, the Environmental Protection Agency, the, you know, Food and Drug Administration, the CDC, anything that is enforcing and mandating regulations and laws of vaccinations or what have you, they're all unconstitutional. The only agency that has the authority to enforce these laws are the militia. And you got to understand that, first of all, the CDC and any mandates for vaccinations or health care are all unconstitutional because there's no amendment granting them that power. You got to understand, in Article 1, Section 8, Congress has the legislative authority, exclusive legislative authority, for only Washington, D.C. So all these laws that they've created, they can inflict upon Washington, D.C. The only way they can inflict it upon the states is if they amend the Constitution. See, so Congress has the ability to create whimsical laws, but those whimsical laws only apply to the District of Columbia. All other laws that Congress wants to perpetuate and promulgate out to the Republic requires that they amend the Constitution if it is not an implied power within the enumerated powers of the Constitution. They don't need implied powers to legislate in Washington, D.C. They have the general authority to do that in Article 1, Section 8, subsection, I think it's 17. Yeah, it is 17. Anyway, so back to the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Why? Because this is you enforcing the law. This is self-governance. This is citizenry involvement and enforcement. We all have an obligation in living and enforcing the laws of the Constitution. And that's why they made this first clause, that the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. We're all supposed to be a part of the militia. And if you didn't know, we have two militias. There are two literal militias within the federal code system. And the militias, and this is where they have the power to do this. There is the organized militia and the unorganized militia. It's that simple, folks. We're out of time. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And we'll be back. God bless. We'll be back into the Third Amendment next episode. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.